Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a really foundational text, something quite special, actually.
We are. We're looking at the Tao Te Ching.
Right, attributed to Lao Tzu. It's deceptively simple in places, but unbelievably deep.
Exactly. And our mission today is really to unpack some of those core ideas, things like Wu Wei, this idea of non-action.
Which sounds passive, but isn't.
Not at all. And simplicity, too. We want to explore how these ancient concepts might genuinely help us find a bit more peace, maybe even effectiveness in, you know, the chaos of modern life.
And it feels so relevant now, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it speaks directly to why we often feel stressed or unhappy.
It really does. The argument is basically that a lot of our suffering isn't really from out there.
It's internal.
Yeah. It's self-inflicted. It comes from resisting how things naturally are, wanting too much all the time, trying to control absolutely everything.
Which is exhausting.
Totally. And the Tao Te Ching just flips that whole script. It says, you know, stop fighting, stop forcing. Instead, yield, let go, simplify. Try to align with the way things actually work.
So it's a path to fulfillment through surrender, not constant struggle.
That's the idea, a very different kind of power.
Okay, so who was the mind behind this? Lao Tzu, the old master.
Right, but figuring out who he actually was is, well, tricky. The name itself is more like a title.
So maybe not one single person?
It's very possible. The historical details are, let's say, appropriately mysterious. He's often seen as semi-legendary, maybe even a composite figure representing different sages.
But the traditional story is pretty compelling.
Oh, it's great. It positions him perfectly. The legend says he was an archivist, a keeper of records in the Zhou Dynasty court, maybe around the 6th century BCE.
A time of upheaval, right?
Yeah, lots of conflict, moral decay, and he just got disillusioned with it all. Decided to leave civilization behind.
Just check out.
Pretty much. He heads west towards the wilderness, ready to disappear. But then the gatekeepers at the pass, Yin Shi.
Ah, this is the key part.
Exactly. Yin Shi sees this profound wisdom in the old master and basically says, you can't leave until you write down what you know.
Wow. So the Tao Te Ching, all 81 chapters, it's like his exit interview with humanity.
Kind of, yeah. And what's fascinating is how different his perspective is from someone like Confucius, who was around at a similar time.
Polar opposites, almost.
In many ways. Confucius was all about structure, ritual, social harmony through defined roles. Lao Tzu looked at that and saw maybe rigidity, artificiality.
So Lao Tzu's wisdom wasn't based on rules and texts.
Not in the same way. It seems to come from a much more direct, intuitive grasp of reality. Spontaneity, the inner world, aligning with this cosmic pattern he calls the Tao.
And he finds power in things we usually overlook, right? The soft, the yielding.
Precisely. Water, valleys, emptiness. Things that seem weak but have this enduring strength. That's his focus.
Which brings us to the book itself. 81 short verses.
Yeah.
Poetic, often paradoxical.
Very paradoxical. And it's meant as both a kind of mystical guide and, surprisingly, a practical handbook for leaders, too.
And all circles around two big ideas, yeah.
The Tao.
The Tao. The way, the source, the pattern of everything. But crucially, it's something you can't really pin down with words or intellect.
And the second idea.
Is Tao.
Usually translated as virtue, but it's maybe closer to the power or the integrity that comes naturally when you live in harmony with the Tao.
Okay, so reading it is like a process of unlearning.
Definitely. It's trying to guide you away from what he calls Wei, that's like forceful, ego-driven action.
The kind of action we usually value.
Often, yes, and guides you towards Wu Wei, effortless action, non-doing.
Which we need to unpack more later.
For sure. And it links to this image he uses, Pu, the uncarved block.
The uncarved block. What's that about?
It's that state of natural potential, you know? Simplicity, authenticity. Before society, before your own ego starts carving you into something specific, something artificial.
Ah, I see. So the whole text is trying to connect that inner authenticity to how the universe works and even how to govern well.
It's incredibly holistic. Personal, yeah. Social, cosmic. It's all linked.
All right, let's dive into some specifics. The book's often split into the Tao Ching, about the Wei, and the Ta Ching, about virtue or power. Where should we start?
Let's start right at the beginning. Chapter 1, that killer opening line.
The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao.
Boom. Right there, it tells you language isn't going to capture this ultimate reality. If you think you've defined it, you've already limited it, missed the point.
So it's about experience, intuition, not just intellectual understanding.
Exactly. You have to feel it, live it.
And chapter 8 gives us that amazing image for how to live it. Water.
The highest good is like water.
Yes.
Think about it. Water benefits everything, doesn't it? It doesn't compete.
It just flows down to the lowest places. Humble.
Humble, flexible, persistent, nourishing. And it avoids conflict. It just finds the path of least resistance. That's the model.
That embrace of the humble, the non-contentious.
Mm-hmm.
That leads into the idea of emptiness, right? Which feels so countercultural now.
Totally countercultural. We're obsessed with being full, busy, accumulating stuff. Lao Tzu says, wait, look at the utility of emptiness.
Chapter 11.
Mm.
The wheel, the pot, the room.
Exactly. 30 spokes make a wheel, but it's the empty space in the hub that makes the wheel useful.
You shape clay into a pot, but it's the empty space inside that holds things.
Right. And a room needs empty doors and windows to be functional. It's the non-being, the emptiness, that often provides the actual value.
So the lesson for us is what? Value stillness. Receptivity.
Precisely. If your mind is just constantly crammed full of noise, plans, worries, desires, judgments, there's no room.
No room for what?
For insight, for creativity, for the Tao to flow through. You need that inner space, that mental emptiness, for something genuinely new or authentic to arise.
Okay, so it's not about doing nothing. It's about creating space for something.
That's a great way to put it. So if that first part focuses on the indescribable source, the second part, the Tai Ching, looks at how virtue, or Te, works when you're aligned with that source.
And how it breaks down when we lose touch.
Right. Chapter 38 is pretty scathing about what we might call artificial morality.
How so?
It says something like, the highest virtue is not virtuous, and therefore it is true virtue.
Okay, that sounds like a paradox again.
It is. His point is that when people start needing to talk constantly about specific virtues, like be kind, be righteous, follow these rituals, it's actually a sign that the natural, spontaneous goodness flowing from the Tao has already been lost.
Ah, so the rules and the labels only appear when the real thing is gone. They're like poor substitutes.
Exactly. They become necessary when we have to force ourselves or others to be good instead of goodness just arising naturally from who we are. Artificial morality, he suggests, creates division, pretense, hypocrisy.
Whereas the true sage just acts without needing a label.
They just embody the way. They don't need to impose a code because their actions naturally align.
And that focus on the internal, that's key for self-mastery too, isn't it? Chapter 33.
Oh yeah, that's a powerful one. He who knows others is wise. Okay, fair enough.
He who knows himself is enlightened.
Big difference. And then, he who conquers others has strength. He who conquers himself is truly strong.
So the real battleground isn't out there, it's inside. Mastering your own ego, desires, fears, that's where real strength lies.
That's the core of it. And believe it or not, he applies this directly to politics, to governance.
How does non-action work for a ruler?
It translates into non-interference, enlightened governance.
Yeah.
He says in chapter 57, basically, the more rules and restrictions you pile on, the poorer and more resentful people become.
So less is more.
Much more. The ideal ruler leads so subtly, so aligned with the natural flow that people barely notice they're being led. They feel like they're governing themselves.
Because the system is simple.
Yeah.
Trust them, empowers them.
Exactly. It doesn't constantly fight against their nature. That builds resilience, trust, morale.
Okay, let's try and boil this down. If someone listening takes away just three key themes, what should they be? Theme one, Wu Wei.
Effortless action, yeah. And again, it's not laziness. It's acting spontaneously, skillfully, without ego, without being attached to making a certain outcome happen.
Like the water finding its path.
Perfect analogy. Or like a sailor adjusting the sails to the wind instead of trying to row against a storm.
Mm-hmm.
It's responsive, not forceful.
So how does that help with, say, stress?
Well, think about when you feel most stressed. Usually it's when you're resisting something, right? Fighting reality. Wu Wei suggests accepting the situation as it is. First the traffic jam, the difficult feeling, breathe into it. Then act skillfully from that place of acceptance, not resistance, reduces that inner friction.
Okay. Theme two, the power of yielding. The feminine principle, yin.
Yes, the text constantly praises qualities associated with yin, receptivity, humility, softness, darkness, the valley. The mysterious feminine.
Why the focus on the feminine?
Because in Taoism, yin is seen as the source, the fertile ground from which yang, the active hard principle, arises. Yielding isn't weakness, it's the ultimate resilience. Like water wearing away rock,
So being adaptable, listening, being receptive, that's true strength.
It allows you to navigate change, to resolve conflict without just escalating it. Think about relationships. Is forcing your view usually effective? Or is listening, yielding a bit, finding common ground more powerful in the long run?
Good point. Okay, theme three, return to simplicity. Put it back.
The uncarved block again. This is about stripping away the artificial stuff, the excessive desires, the need for status, the layers of social conditioning that tell us who we should be.
Getting back to basics, authenticity.
Exactly. It's a huge critique of complexity and consumerism, really. Larissa says contentment doesn't come from getting more. It comes from realizing what's genuinely enough, finding joy in that natural, simple state.
Profoundly simple. Yet so hard to do sometimes.
Which is why the book is full of these incredibly memorable poetic lines to remind us.
Let's share a few key ones. We already mentioned the first. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao sets the stage.
Essential. Then there's the one about water, chapter 78. Nothing in the world is softer than water, yet nothing is better at overcoming the hard and strong.
That perfectly captures that power in yielding. Flexibility over brute force.
Always. And on contentment, chapter 33 again. He who knows that enough is enough will always have enough.
That just cuts right to the chase, doesn't it? The antidote to endless wanting.
It really does. And finally, for anyone feeling overwhelmed by a big task, chapter 64, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
The classic. It's about patience, right?
Yeah.
And just focusing on the very next thing you can actually do.
Takes the paralysis away. Just do the step in front of you.
Okay, let's make this super practical. Real life applications. Managing anxiety.
Apply Wu Wei and yielding. Instead of fighting the anxious feeling or raging at the situation you can't control.
Like being stuck in traffic.
Exactly. Acknowledge it. Okay, I feel anxious, or okay, I'm stuck. Breathe. Accept the moment without needing it to be different right now. That non-resistance can dial down the mental friction way more than fighting it does.
And for leadership or management.
Practice that enlightened governance. Lead with a lighter touch. Set clear principles. Trust your team. Empower them. Provide resources. Remove obstacles. But don't micromanage how they do it.
Fosters more ownership and resilience.
Absolutely. People thrive when they feel trusted and competent.
What about creativity or decision making if you're stuck?
Remember the value of emptiness. Creative blocks often happen because we're trying too hard, forcing it. The mind is too full.
So step back. Meditate. Go for a walk.
Anything that creates mental space. Let the mind be still, receptive, empty. Often the best ideas or the right path just emerges spontaneously when you stop trying to wrestle it into existence.
It feels like so much of this comes back to trusting something beyond our conscious effort.
I think that's right.
What really struck me most revisiting this is just how powerful the paradoxes are. Weakness is strength. Emptiness is useful. Yielding overcomes. It resonates deeply, even though it turns so much conventional wisdom on its head.
Yeah, for me, the big lasting insight is just that life doesn't have to be this constant grinding struggle. The goal isn't control, it's alignment. It's about reducing friction, finding flow, trusting the process. It really is a guide to the art of just being.
So if the Tao that can be told isn't the real deal, maybe the question we leave you with is this. Beyond logic, beyond language, what deeper intuition or sense are you tuning into this week to guide your way? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.